Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, November 10th, 2015. I'm Lee Robartis in the news. Family members say Adams County Sheriff's deputies committed senseless murder of council area rancher Jack Yantis. Single stream recycling in Moscow won't start until around the New Year's. Update on Moscow rebranding. Pullman Council to vote on 6-month moratorium on new cannabis businesses tonight, and Oregon wolves to be taken off state endangered species list. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Northwest Power and Conservation Council's public hearing on the Northwest Power Plan in Spokane Thursday will consider a scenario where 3 coal-fired power plants providing power to the Northwest would close in the next 20 years. Those plants are in Centralia, Washington, Boardman, Oregon, and Valmy, Nevada. The closure of those 3 plants would reduce carbon emissions from electricity production in the Northwest from 55 million metric tons per year to 34 million metric tons. Washington Governor Jay Inslee has also asked the council to consider the carbon emissions reduction for the Northwest should those 3 coal-fired power plants plus 2 more at Colstrip, Montana and Rock Springs, Montana were to close, along with the region's least efficient natural gas-fired turbines. The Colstrip plant is partially owned by Avista and Puget Sound Power and Light. Under that scenario, carbon emissions from electricity production in the region would drop 80% to about 12 million metric tons per year. However, that plan would cost an extra $20 billion over 20 years, mainly to build less polluting gas-fired turbines to replace the coal plants. Northwest Power and Conservation Council Power Planning Director Tom Ekman told the Spokesman Review, coal produces about 12 to 15% of the electricity used in the Northwest, but it's responsible for 85% of the carbon emissions. It's a prime target when you look at what you can do to reduce carbon emissions. The hearing on the Northwest Power Plan will take place Thursday at the Red Lion Inn at 700 North Division Street in Spokane, starting at 5 p.m. The Power Planning Council will take written comments on the plan until Friday, December 18th. First District Judge Fred Gibler sentenced the man who started a gun battle with police on an Interstate 90 overpass in June of last year to between 20 and 45 years in prison today. Judge Gibler said the lengthy 20-year fixed term for 10 counts of aggravated assault was due to 25-year-old Marcus Rail of Arizona putting the lives of officers in danger. Gibler said of the incident, "You were given several opportunities to give yourself up. You didn't do so." Rail shot at officers about 60 times with an AK-47 and other guns after he fled a traffic stop in Coeur d'Alene. Police shot back at him and hit him in the back, arm, and leg, and then arrested him. Spokane police have identified the man they shot and injured at a Division Street Senex station Saturday as 22-year-old Tyler Randant. 2 officers shot Randant after responding to a report of a man armed with a knife trying to stop cars driving south on Division Street in northern Spokane. Police say when they arrived, the man was at the Senex station and trying to force his way into a parked car when they shot him. Randant was listed in stable condition at a Spokane hospital. The Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission voted 4-2 yesterday to take wolves off the state endangered species list. There are 81 gray wolves in the state. Taking the wolves off the endangered species list in the state does not immediately change state management policies for the wolves, and they are still cannot be legally killed except under certain conditions. Some environmental groups opposed the delisting and encouraged the commission to change the status of wolves from endangered to threatened rather than completely delisting them. Gray wolves were wiped out in Oregon during eradication campaigns during the early part of the last century. Oregon Wild Executive Director Sean Stevens told the Reuters news agency, "Ultimately, the commission voted to side with political expediency over a sound public and scientific process. While this is currently a blow to our tiny population of 81 gray wolves and for the legitimacy of wildlife management in Oregon, it is not the end of the struggle." Second District Judge John Stegner in Moscow sentenced 26-year-old Cato Nelson of Troy to 30 days in jail and 3 years probation yesterday for burglarizing a number of cars in Moscow. Moscow police arrested Nelson August 5th and found him in possession of a stolen Sony radio, CD player, and a backpack that police said were stolen from vehicles on Paradise Drive earlier. 32-year-old Drifter Nibbler of Julietta has filed a petition with the Idaho Supreme Court challenging his lengthy prison sentence for vehicular homicide. Nibbler was convicted of vehicular homicide stemming from an incident May 3, 2014, where his vehicle hit 58-year-old Julietta resident Stanley Solberg. A blood alcohol test showed Nibbler had twice the legal limit of alcohol in his blood for driving. The appeal says Judge Stegner abused his discretion by giving Nibbler an excessive 2 to 10 year prison sentence. The Idaho Court of Appeals rejected Nibbler's appeal October 29th. The wife and a nephew of a council area rancher who was killed by Adams County deputies November 1st say police were unjustified in killing 62-year-old Jack Yantis and say the claims of a shootout are untrue. According to written statements prepared with their attorneys and provided to the Idaho Statesman newspaper, Yantis's wife Donna Yantis and nephew Rowdy Paradis watched a deputy pull the rifle Jack Yantis was using to kill his bull that had just been hit by a car outside his driveway. The Adams County dispatcher had called Yantis to come take care of the 2,500-pound Gelbvieh bull, whose rear leg was shattered by a collision with a Subaru station wagon on U.S. Highway 95, 6 miles north of Council. Donna Yantis and Rowdy Paradis say police were using a semi-automatic rifle and pistols to shoot the bull, which had been charging emergency workers tending to the injured occupants of the Subaru. Paradis wrote, "They opened up with their pistols and their M16s before Jack got there. That's an inhumane deal. This is a 2-ton Angus bull that's pissed off. He's hurt and psychotic. It was blazing down there, and it sounded like World War III on this bull because they got him charging at everyone again." Paradis said he put the lights from a skid loader on the bull, and Jack Yantis, quote, "lined up to shoot the bull in the back of the head and put him out humanely." Donnie Yantis and Paradis said Jack Yantis had his finger on the trigger when a deputy grabbed Jack Yantis from behind and spun him around and grabbed the rifle scope. Paradis said a deputy pushed Yantis and the rifle was pointed at the ground. As he tried to regain his footing, he said he doesn't know if the rifle fired accidentally, either when Yantis was spun around or when a bullet from a deputy went through Yantis's hand. At that point, Paradis said, one deputy began shooting at Yantis and then the other one did. They hit him in the chest and abdomen. When Yantis fell to the ground, Paradis and Donna Yantis say they began running towards him, and the deputies threw them down in the middle of U.S. Highway 95 and searched and handcuffed them. Paradis said one deputy pointed his gun at his head, and nobody went to check on Jack. Donna Yantis had a heart attack at that point, and later ambulance crews took her to Midvale, and then a crew airlifted her to St. Alphonsus Regional Medical Center in Boise. She made her statement from her hospital bed, where she remained Saturday. Deputies also handcuffed Joe Rumsey, who had been near the wrecked Subaru and ran towards where Yantis was after the shooting. Paradis said although family members asked the deputies to put the bull out of his misery, it lay there still alive and bleeding out for 2 hours. Paradis said the bull suffocated on his lung blood because the deputies shot him in the gut. The bull did not have to be fenced because that part of Idaho is legally designated as open range. Under the old open range laws in many western states, those who hit livestock on highways are responsible for paying damages to the livestock, and livestock owners are not responsible for any accidents caused by their animals wandering on highways in open range areas. Donna Yantis said in her statement, "I saw them murder my husband." Yantis' daughter, Sarah, told the Idaho Statesman, "There was no shootout. It was a senseless murder." Adams County Sheriff Ryan Zolman said shortly after the incident, both deputies and Yantis had fired their weapons. The Idaho State Police are investigating the incident. In a statement last week, ISP spokesperson Teresa Baker wrote, "ISP reassures those involved in this incident, their families, and the public at large that they are committed to complete a thorough investigation into this incident to determine exactly what transpired. ISP detectives are continuing to conduct interviews and are methodically examining each piece of evidence. Physical evidence will be sent to forensic labs for analysis in hopes of revealing further facts that will help piece together the events that unfolded that night. The testing of forensic evidence and an investigation of this nature takes time, and ISP and the Adams County Sheriff's Office request patience as the investigation process continues. There will not be any information or comments on the evidence involved in this incident until the investigation is complete." The occupants of the Subaru, Doris and Jack Garner of Nampa, were seriously injured in the crash. They were both airlifted to St. Alphonsus Hospital in Boise. As of yesterday, Doris Garner was still in the hospital, having recently been moved out of the intensive care unit. Jack Garner was released from the hospital over the weekend and still must recover from his injuries. Moscow's single-stream curbside recycling program may not get started until New Year's. City Sanitation Operations Manager Tim Davis told the Moscow City Council's Administrative Committee yesterday afternoon the sanitation department had to stop taking delivery of the new recycling roll carts temporarily because the first shipment of the new carts arrived early, and the wrong-colored carts that the city rejected were still filling up the south parking lot at the recycling center. Davis said city crews will finish removing the carts that the city won't be using sometime this week so the city can continue taking delivery of the new curbside recycling roll carts again. He also said it will take crews about 3 weeks to exchange the lids from the rejected carts, which have Latos Sanitation's LSI logo on them. They plan on exchanging those lids for the plain black lids arriving with the new carts. Here's Sanitation Operations Manager Tim Davis speaking with Moscow City Councilmember Dan Karskalin yesterday.
We're going to be running right up against the holidays. We've got Christmas and New Year's, which both fall on a Friday. LSI's plan is to basically distribute these carts on the weekends with their current staff. So I think the 1st of January is probably a little over-optimistic, but not impossible.
As far as implementation?
I think realistically we're probably looking at that second week in January, but I don't know yet until the carts are on the ground and we'll see how things are going. I've met with LSI several times since I reported to council. We are working on putting together new routes specifically for the recycling.
So different than regular garbage routes or?
Somewhat. We're going to have about 450 stops that will be affected by day changes of garbage collection as well. The new recycling routes basically had to be built from scratch because it's a totally new route on the same day. So we're just about done with that. Right now they're just going to work on the apartment routes. What else do I have? Oh, the other thing that we talked about was the information packet content that we'll be delivering with the carts, and we got that narrowed down. Moscow Recycling developed a new pamphlet that they'll be distributing down at the recycle center, which we also want to include with the cart delivery, that speaks specifically to single-stream recycling, the kind of instructional stuff. Again, we'll send out that list that was with the original mailer of the acceptable and prohibitive materials, and then we put together a little instruction sheet with frequently asked questions and how far to set the carts apart and this and that, kind of like what we did when we rolled out the original roll cart program.
That was Moscow Sanitation Operations Manager Tim Davis speaking with City Councilmember Dan Karskalin during yesterday's Moscow City Council Administrative Committee meeting. Davis said Andy Boyd of Lata Sanitation has been in contact with Lakeside Disposal in McCall, where the city is considering switching to single-stream curbside recycling as well. Davis said Lakeside Disposal is interested in possibly purchasing some of Lata Sanitation's roll carts that had been rejected by the city of Moscow because the color was too similar to the regular trash roll carts. At yesterday's Moscow City Council Administrative Committee meeting, Assistant City Supervisor Jen Pfiffner gave council members an update on the $50,000 plan to rebrand the city. The city has contributed $10,000 to the rebranding effort, with the Chamber of Commerce paying $30,000 and the University of Idaho paying $10,000. Here's Jen Pfiffner.
This process has taken some time as well, but it's really been exciting to see the different partnerships and relationships that we've continued to build on with the university, with the chamber, the business community. We began this about over a year ago. There was a Department of Tourism grant that Gina Tarusio, the executive director of the Chamber of Commerce, secured and asked us to participate in creating or identifying what Moscow is and how we could brand it accordingly. Really putting together a unified message for our tourism efforts, our economic development, enrollment, all the different things that make up Moscow and how we can really get the most bang for our buck in those activities. We've gone through an extensive public input process, did that over the last year, and that included stakeholder interviews. We had a community survey. Our consultants have done secret shopper visits to check out the town. They've been down quite a few times, which has been nice to see as well.
And they're from?
They're from Spokane, so fairly close. As Gene has done throughout the process, is touch base with our Department of Tourism folks to say, okay, here's what we've done, get some feedback from them to incorporate in the process as well, since they're such a major partner in the project. We just got another round of feedback that the steering committee will be addressing as we move forward. The bulk of the research work has been done, I think, to this date. Public input and all that's always so important. We made sure we paid good attention to that. So next part will be the actual messaging that will come out of that and what that looks like in conjunction with the tourism feedback and the steering committee's opinion. So we look forward to moving that ahead as well.
That was Assistant Moscow City Supervisor Jen Pfiffner at yesterday's City Council Administrative Committee meeting. The city, university, and Chamber of Commerce last year hired the Spokane consulting firm BHWI to come up with a community brand. BHWI subcontracted with Inland Northwest Broadcasting to perform some of the community input activities, including questioning people in Friendship Square on several occasions over the summer. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. The sitting Clarkston City Council voted 5-2 last night to continue with its ban on retail cannabis businesses within the city. The motion from City Councilmember Brian Kolstad was to start the process of lifting the ban. Kolstad has 2 years remaining in his council term and will be joined by three newly elected city council members and a new mayor in January who support removing the ban. Councilmember Belinda Campbell, who was appointed to the council early after winning a seat in last week's election, voted with Kolstad to lift the ban. newly elected Mayor Monica Lawrence and newly elected council members Skate Pierce and Monica Beauchamp will be sworn in after the new year. According to an account of the meeting in the Lewiston Tribune, Kolstad told the rest of the council, "You guys got us in the position. The people have spoken. The city needs to stop spending money on something that's no longer an issue." Community members who attended the meeting mostly supported lifting the ban, and some were angry. Resident Gary Fothergill said, "7 weeks and this is over." The ban on cannabis stores resulted in Assotin County Superior Court Judge Scott Galena issuing 2 injunctions, one each against 2 pot stores, which opened on 6th Street earlier this year without City of Clarkston business licenses. The stores reopened after a Washington Division III court commissioner put Judge Galena's injunction against the cannabis stores on hold in September. They closed again late last month when a 3-judge appellate panel voted 2-1 in favor of the injunction. One of the stores sued the city. The 2 store owners said while they were open, they made $100,000 in sales and paid about $36,000 in marijuana excise taxes, and some of that money went to the city. At last night's meeting, City Attorney Todd Richardson said the council must meet in executive session before taking action on Kolstad's motion to remove the ban. The city has retained Attorney Kenneth Harper of Yakima to represent the city on cannabis issues. Harper is scheduled to meet with city officials next month. The Pullman City Council will vote on a 6-month moratorium on new cannabis businesses in the city at tonight's meeting. Mayor Glenn Johnson says the moratorium will not affect the 2 pot stores already operating in the city, nor the 3rd cannabis retail store in the planning stages for Bishop Boulevard. The moratorium issue came up after the Washington Liquor and Cannabis Control Board decided to remove the geographical caps on cannabis businesses after the governor signed legislation this year to close most of the medical cannabis dispensaries and combine most parts of the medical and recreational cannabis systems. The board had earlier limited Pullman to 3 pot shops, with a 4th allowed in the rest of Whitman County, but it lifted that state limit this summer. The Pullman Council will also hold a public hearing on the 2016 budget and will be asked to pass resolutions and ordinances putting in place the budget for the next year. The Pullman City Council will also vote on a resolution tonight authorizing the city to accept a State Transportation Department grant for Pullman Transit and a resolution to purchase an Americans with Disabilities Act accessible vehicle for Dial-A-Ride services from Sketchy Northwest Sales. The council will also hear a motion to accept a donation of land from Eleanor McCloskey. The Pullman City Council is also scheduled to hold a joint meeting tonight with the District 9 State Legislative Delegation as part of the council meeting. Senator Mark Schostler of Ritzville, Representative Joe Schmick of Colfax, and Representative Mary Dye of Pomeroy are scheduled to be in attendance. The joint meeting topics include grants, low-interest loans, sharing of liquor and marijuana taxes with local agencies, the Wastewater Reuse Project Fund, education support, transportation funding, the State Public Records Act as it impacts cities, human resources, homelessness, affordable housing, and area paths and trails. The Pullman City Council will meet at 7 p.m. tonight at City Hall. The Pullman School Board was expected to discuss putting a $23 million bond before district voters today to build a 4th elementary school in Pullman. Superintendent Paul Sturm says the district has increased by 450 students since 2008. The district is already in the process of building 4 more classrooms at Jefferson Elementary School and built 6 new classrooms last year at Franklin Elementary. Sturm said the state could pay $6 million to help build the new school if they approve a district grant application the district is planning to submit. Under Initiative 1351, passed by voters statewide last year, class sizes are limited to 17 students, kindergarten through third grade, and 25 students, fourth grade through 12th grade. Sturm says the district will probably need 16 new classrooms by 2018 to comply. A report from the Washington Auditor's Office says Whitman County must still implement internal controls over payroll. The county has partnered with the Government Finance Officers Association to build internal controls into the payroll process, but the auditor's report says no improvements have been made to the current methods used to process payroll. The report covered last year. According to the Daily News, Whitman County Administrative Director Gary Petrovich said the recommended system improvements will be implemented over time and may not show up in the audit for 2015, but should be reflected in the 2016 report. Petrovich said a corrective action can't happen overnight. It's going to take a while to dig out of this. It will take us years to get out of this mess, but if we do the right things, we will see immediate benefits in 2017, 2018, and 2019. Moscow fire crews responded across the state line yesterday morning when a minivan crashed through a barrier at the intersection of the Moscow-Pullman Highway and Airport Road at about 9:20 a.m. and went down an embankment and caught fire. Moscow Fire Chief Brian Nickerson told the Daily News the van was fully engulfed in flames. The driver escaped the burning vehicle, and ambulance crews transported him to Gritman Medical Center. Moscow Police Chief David Duke said the man was from Spokane Valley and had multiple arrest warrants, including probation violations for a Spokane larceny case and for forgery in Las Vegas. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. It'll be increasing clouds and rain and snow after 4 a.m., low 33, 80% chance of precipitation, total nighttime snow accumulation less than half an inch possible. Tomorrow, rain and snow showers before 10 a.m., then scattered rain showers, 80% chance of precipitation, high 41, west winds 15 to 20 with gusts up to 30 miles an hour. Partly cloudy Wednesday night, low 30. Partly sunny Thursday, high 42. Mostly cloudy Thursday night, low 34. And a 40% chance of rain Friday, cloudy, high 47. Currently at the Pullman-Moscow Regional Airport, fair skies, 35 degrees. And there is a winter weather advisory for 4 a.m. until 10 a.m. tomorrow. A vigorous and fast-moving weather disturbance will bring a quick shot of snow by early Wednesday morning. Light snow accumulations are expected across the northern valleys and into the Idaho Panhandle. People should expect precipitation to decrease by Wednesday afternoon, but gusty winds will continue. The advisory is for Moscow, Plummer, Potlatch, Genesee, Post Falls, Hayden, Worley, and Coeur d'Alene. Snow accumulations in the region up to 2 inches. Snow will begin late tonight, peaking at 7 a.m. before tapering off by late morning. Sheltered roadways will become slushy and slippery, which may slow down morning travel. Southwest winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 30, and snow level rising to 2,500 feet by late morning. Winter weather advisory means snow. Periods of snow will cause primarily travel difficulties. People should be prepared for snow-covered roads and limited visibilities and use caution while driving. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. I'm Lee Robartis. Remember, all editions of the KRFP Evening Report are archived online on the KRFP website shortly after broadcast. Have a good evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, Community Radio for the Palouse. Our weekly documentary from Making Contact is coming up next, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine. And at 7:30, music begins with Dave Weaver in the studio to bring you the Tuesday Night Grab Bag, and Kentaro's in with Audiodrome at 9 o'clock. Stand by for more.